There are many technical problems involved in this proposal. I shall not stop to discuss them at this stage, but I should like to make one observation. We have recently entered into two regional security pacts, the Rio Treaty and the North Atlantic Treaty. In both of those treaties, we have refused to accept a situation in which our forces and resources could be used for collective action except on our own decision. I sometimes wonder what reason there is to believe that this country would be willing to give a majority of the United Nations the kind of authority that it has so far denied to the other 20 American republics and to the other 11 members of the North Atlantic group. There are several other proposals for eliminating the veto. And then there is a group of proposals that go even further. They involve the transformation of the United Nations into a system of world government, either on a federal or a unitary basis. These proposals are not new. When we were working on the Charter of the United Nations, some highly articulate groups were urging upon us the idea that the principle of voluntary association on which we were working should be abandoned in favor of the principle of supranational government. There was a time when this pressure became sufficiently strong to make it necessary for President Roosevelt and Secretary Hull to reassure the country that we were not seeking a system of supergovernment. For at that time, the principal effects of the pressure were to arouse fears that the United States might be led into an organization based on the supergovernment principle. Those who worked on the charter were convinced that the real issue was not between the relative merits of the two basic principles. The basic issue was whether it was possible to create any kind of world organization in which all of the peace-seeking nations, and especially the major nations, would be willing to adhere. It was felt that if the world government idea had been put on the agenda of international negotiations, no success was likely to emerge. The behavior of the Soviet Union today in staging its wholesale walkout merely because it is dissatisfied with the character of one country's representation in the United Nations, ought to throw some pertinent light on the possibilities of creating, under present conditions, a fully functioning world state. But apart from the question whether the creation of a world government system is feasible, desirable, or even likely to do what its proponents claim for it, and if I had the time, I should have liked very much to give you my reasons why I think that not one of these is true. What concerns me is again whether the American people would and should enter into an arrangement in which its armed forces would be and resources could be used without its consent. And let us remember that a world government system would mean much more than that. It would mean the right of such a government to conscript American citizens, to tax American citizens, to regulate immigration, perhaps, to pluck an American from the street of an American city and bring him to trial before an international tribunal, and to do a great many other things that would need to be done if such a government were to function. The proponents of the scheme assure us that all they are thinking of is a world government endowed with defined and limited powers to maintain international peace and security. I am afraid that no matter how much you define and how much you limit the powers of a world government called upon to perform the tasks involved, there would be very little left of the powers now possessed by the government of the United States or any other country entering into such a system that would really be substantial. In my frequent discussions with my friends who support this idea, I always say to them that before I would be prepared to consider seriously the idea of a super state as a solution for our problems, I would like to see a balance sheet of the difficulties that a world government system would eliminate and of the difficulties that it is likely to create. It would be too much to expect that so revolutionary a change in the government of the human race would produce no tensions and no difficulties in international relations. I have not yet obtained from anybody any such balance sheet, and I hope that someday we might get it. Now there are some proponents of change who urge that the establishment of regional government on a federal principle would take care of it. The most prominent of these is the scheme for North Atlantic Federation. The same arguments exactly, the same considerations, from the point of view of American participation, apply here as do in the case of a world government, and the same problems are presented for decision to the people of the United States. There is one point of crucial importance that I should like to note in connection with all these proposals. They all concentrate on machinery of government and machinery of relations among nations, rather than on the underlying processes of organized society. They are all based on the idea that if we could only find the right machinery, everything would be all right. I do not deny, of course, that machinery is extremely important in social organization, whether on a national, a regional, or a world scale. But it ought to be clear that no machinery of government can function effectively unless back of it are the attitudes and the basic human relationships without which no piece of governmental machinery can really function. Looking back over the post-war years, looking at the United Nations in operation during the period of its existence, it seems clear to me that there is plenty of machinery in the world to make peace and security living reality if only there were back of that machinery a real determination to make it work. Details, in some cases important ones, very important ones, could and should be perfected as experience points the way. The United Nations Charter was never intended to be a fixed and inflexible instrument. On the contrary, a conscious effort was made to make it an instrument capable of development and growth. The Charter itself provides for periodic reviews of the operations of the United Nations. It was originally thought such a review might not be necessary for 10 years. Perhaps events have moved sufficiently speedily to make such a review advisable in the near future. But it seems to me that attempts to solve the grave and perilous problems that confront us by tinkering with machinery alone are merely searches for an escape from the stubborn realities of the world in which we live. The most stubborn of those realities, I think, is that there is no easy way out, that only patience, hard work, ingenuity, good work, good nerves, strength, willingness to use that strength, not mechanical panaceas, offer any hope that mankind will win through the terrific difficulties with which it is now faced. I am convinced that if the energy and enthusiasm that are now being put into the advocacy of new machinery were devoted to making the existing machinery work, if the nations of the world were to give evidence of their being guided by only a small portion of the spirit of tolerance, accommodation, respect for each other, and willingness to accept responsibility that would be necessary to make the new machinery a world government or something like that work, mankind could very confidently face the future with what we now have by way of international machinery. I am very much afraid that as matters stand today, we're in danger of dropping the bone to chase the shadow.